Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye Live with The Fedge.
If it was up to me, I'd dump the Israelis tomorrow.
Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. Absolutely. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. From Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch, and you are live Inside the Eye. Today's date is Saturday, March 4th, 2017, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening out there in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon, the evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Riyadh is really starting to heat up as to what is generally a short spring anyways. Today, the temperatures hit a high of 78 degrees with winds of around 8 to 9 miles per hour out of the east, while temperatures tonight are expected to drop to around 67 degrees around the useful part of the evening and 59 degrees in the hour just before sunrise. In this week's show, we do not have any guests scheduled, so good morning to all of you out there. It's going to be basically 3 hours of yours truly discussing probably some of Donald Trump's State of the Union address as well as some developments in Europe. And also on the military fronts here in the Middle East, you can add to that whatever rants appear or just happen to pop into my head as the show goes through. We got 3 hours, so just sit back, relax. I know you guys enjoy the show typically. So enjoy 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. Now, it's been a really hectic week for me here in Riyadh where my schedule has been really pretty filled. So that's left me very little time to focus on Inside the Eye Live and its related franchises like the Twitter feed and all that kind of fun stuff. It took me a while even to get last week's show posted. Thanks to all the people that did respond via emails. Appreciate all the support out there. I know you guys are pretty good. You understand the challenges, at least a lot of you do, of getting out of really the heart of the Middle East and then doing a live show every week from this part of the world, which is really not as easy as you might think. So we appreciate your support. We try to keep everything as really as a high level as we can, and we generally do a pretty good job. You know, there's a we had been talking back in the winter time here in Saudi, you know, about the control, how they control expatriates and issues of this within this vein. And of course, you've got the issues with Trump and immigration and things like that. But here in the Middle East, at least for Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia is like a very tightly controlled market. And they do that because Saudi Arabia is an economic engine. They estimate that there's about 20 to 21, perhaps as much as 22 million Saudis and another 7 to 10 million non-Saudis living here in Saudi Arabia. Now, for the Americans and the British and the Westerners, we're actually a very small number. Most of us are very professional. We come in really to provide management talent. Not really talent, really. We do provide a lot of management talent, but we also provide training so that Saudis can go on and start to manage their own affairs. So typically, typically for those of us in, say, in the training business, our lives are short-lived. You take projects. When you are finished, you are basically thanked. They do appreciate our efforts here, quite frankly. And then, of course, but your job is to replace yourself. You are training yourself. You are trying to duplicate yourself so that people can eventually not need Western talent. And that's not entirely possible. But nonetheless, that's kind of what part of what goes on here. But part of the process is telephones. You know, you need SIM cards, you need telephones, you need GSM networks, you need internet, you need all of this. And what they do typically is they kind of target expatriates. They create regimens that make it very difficult for us to get out of the country, you know, as far as communications go. They want you to spend your money on expensive voice services. And I've been in the telecom business a really long time. We get how it works. We understand how countries and companies want to protect their markets, protect their revenues, as the saying goes. But welcome to the real world, everybody. But nonetheless, if you want to get a SIM card, you want to get a telephone line, that has to be linked to biometrics. And that biometrics is linked to your immigration passport. So whenever you come into the country, you have to provide biometrics to the Ministry of Interior. That goes to what's known as, a National Information Center, which is part of the Ministry of the Interior. And eventually, you go to the cell phone company and you link your fingerprint to your immigration fingerprint, and that allows you to get a SIM card. So if there's any problems anywhere along the process, you are not allowed even to have a cell phone in the country. Compare that to what we do, of course, in America and elsewhere in the West, and there's not even a hint of the same type of control regimen. Of course, I bring that up because immigration is a key focus a lot now in the West. I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that we do have a campaign by essentially our Jewish minority to flood our countries with really some very ill-mannered, to say politely, people, and to destroy the demographics of what was essentially a Western world. And that is a real hot topic. It's a key focal point across the West now. People are starting to become alive and aware of what's going on. It's getting hard to hide these realities. So we like to raise some of what they're doing here in the Middle East so that you have an idea how you can reciprocate towards anybody coming to your countries. And I'm not asking people to be negative. I'm not asking people to... In other words, we want to keep an open world. It is our world as the human family, but we want to obviously control borders and allow our cultures and civilizations to coexist with everybody else, and that's not what our Jewish minority has in mind for the world, really, but mainly for the West. But anyways, we got everything solved finally. We went into the diplomatic quarter, and I swear, I took somebody that was with a telecommunications firm just in case I had any problems, and I tell you what, inside the diplomatic zone here in Saudi, it's like a whole different world. It's very clean, ordered, organized. It feels comfortable, much less stress, quite frankly, inside the diplomatic quarter, the diplomatic zone here. And once I got in there, I'll tell you what, the telephone company took care of everything within about 40 seconds. And imagine, I went to 10 stores, spent probably 20 hours, 15 hours, something like that, trying to get a telephone. And I know the telecom business, and it was really, really hard. So I really appreciated the help I got just a week and a half ago or so. And so we finally got everything. We are like ready to rock and roll here. And so I've been very busy all week and expecting to get busier now that I can start to work and move again. Because it's kind of hard to work, guys, everybody, if you don't have a phone. You try it. Just take your phones away in today's world and see what happens. Last week's show, we had Lady Michelle Renouf on, and she is, I guess, I have a hard time describing her, but she's an ex-model. She spent a lot of time in the advertising business. She was in front of the camera a lot. She spent time at a university where she was one of the first to really look at media studies, which is really kind of a science nowadays. I know people that actually have studios, 40, 50 television stations running at the same time, 4 or 5 staff that just watch the news and aggregate the news and put those into reports that are then sent on to investment committees that decide where money is going to go. Of course, we Americans and other countries have our own media intelligence monitoring systems where we watch the media from around the world to try to get hints as to anything that might be leaking through media sources. This would call media intelligence. So all of this goes on, and she was part of that early phase of that, and she has been around a lot of the historical truth and historical reporting. I think we can put it that way. But we've talked a lot about truth and historical reporting, especially things about the Hola hoax, the TM, you know, the trademarked business of extorting money from the West that Jews do relative to this idea they call a holy hoax, which is what we call it, of course, because it did not happen as they claimed it did. And it's very, very unfair, dishonest, and quite frankly, evil to lambast entire people, entire culture for this type of gain. This is evil. What we see within the Jewish community, quite frankly, relative to the Holocaust business, is pure evil. And I don't know how else to call it, to victimize an entire race, an entire culture, which is what Jews do to the German people and really to all of us in the West. We are being subjected to an evil, very evil campaign, and we need to recognize it for what it is. This week, the European Union, which, as you know, is a non-accountable body. It is a Talmudic, I guess it kind of appears to be Talmudic anyways, type of institution. It declared war, quite frankly, on the United States this week. It's a soft type of war. But the European Union, believe it or not, has declared what we consider to be a soft war on the United States of America. And the way that is done is through visa travel. We Americans, we have a deal where obviously we as a nation, and now I'm speaking as if I'm in America, and I am certainly a American, and I look out for American interests. We Americans have a right to allow people into any country. We have a right to allow people to come in from any country we want. But what has happened is that the European Union has decided to step in front of that and demand upon the American people who they should and should not allow into various countries inside of Europe. So what they did, the European Parliament voted this week to end visa-free travel for Americans within the European Union. Now, as far as I take that as a form of an act of war by the European Union against the American people. And the reason why they did that is because the United States is blocking visa-free travel for citizens of Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Poland, and Romania. Well, as many people out there would say, and certainly the British know, you have a big problem with Poles coming in. They want to partake of the benefits of the West, and they come in, and the same with the Romanians and the Roma, the gypsies, really. They come in and they cause a lot of problems, and all of this is known in Europe. It's also known to the United States State Department. Bulgaria is one of these countries that, although it might be part of the EU, it is an economically disadvantaged area, so you can be subjected to a lot of economic migrants coming in. Same from Croatia and Cyprus, for whatever reason, I don't know, but that may indeed be the case also. So what has happened now is the European Union, which again is not a country by any stretch of the imagination, the European Union is telling the United States of America, if you do not allow these 5 countries in, we're going to start blocking American access to the European Union. So this vote is again urging the revocation of current U.S. travel citizens to Europe. This scheme would begin to be phased in 2 months, meaning that Americans would have to apply for extra documents beginning a year after this was implemented. And the commission discovered 3 years ago that as they call it, that the U.S. was not meeting its obligations under the reciprocity agreement. But when we set these agreements up, these other countries weren't really part of the EU, if you know what I mean. The European Union is also declaring somewhat of a soft war on Australia, Brunei, Japan, and Canada under these same conditions. The commission is legally obliged to act to suspend the visa waiver for the United States for American citizens, but the European Parliament or the Council of the European Union has a chance to object to the delegated act if it so chooses to do so. Members of the European Parliament press for the move in order to encourage the Americans to play its part, according to a statement by their parliament. Again, this parliament is just a quasi bunch of quacks running around. They're really unaccountable to anybody. They are a draconian, almost like a totalitarian organization over all of Europe. It is a dark cloud. And now they are going to tell the American people who we should and should not allow into our country. And this is in spite of the fact that we have had, obviously being a Western European country, which is America, which is what America has traditionally been, we have been obviously very keen to keep strong relations with Europeans. And we continue to be wanting to keep strong relations with Europeans. But we don't need to keep strong relations with the European Union. That's a critical issue here. Now, if the European Union wants to declare war on the United States, we as Americans should take that to heart. And that would be something that our State Department should be looking into. That is certainly something that although it's really hard because our Congress is essentially Jewish run. It's amazing, by the way. Maybe I'll get some stats on that later for the show, just how many Americans, quote unquote Americans, are really Jewish people lording over the American people and its governmental institutions. It is unbelievable. And if you want to look for any problems, well, obviously I would say look for those who are managing it. And that, of course, sends you back to Israel and the Jewish people. But nonetheless, guys, that's an interesting development coming out of Europe again. As far as we are concerned, those of us who are Americans who've been traveling and working around the world, this type of declaration by the European Union, it's not an open declaration of war, but it is certainly a soft declaration of war. The European Union wants to essentially dictate to the American people who we should and should not allow into our country. In the meantime, they're allowing Georgians to come in. Georgians are essentially largely a Jewish, if you look at the elite of Georgia, it's largely another one of these Jewish-run countries. So isn't it amazing that, we get this, all these Jewish-run countries start to get it, and now that we're not allowing certain things in America, just remember, everybody, the EU has kept expanding and expanding. It's kind of like NATO. It just keeps expanding and expanding. And they're also going to be considering this type of regimen for the United Kingdom and its residents if Brexit takes hold. You can look for perhaps also a revocation of visa-free travel to Europe for the UK. So what we're looking at here is certainly in the case of Europe, we are looking at an isolationist trend going on. They are trying to insulate themselves, certainly. At the meantime, they want to impose upon the nations within the bloc a very, very draconian, pro-immigration, anti-European policy, which is really destroying Europe, as many of us know. And so we'll be watching this over the next few months just to see exactly what is happening. Mind you, you know what's amazing about the Europeans? This is how stupid the European Parliament really, really is. By the way, I haven't said hello. I said hello, but Join me in the chat room. I'm actually there. I just said hello once. I don't see anyone complaining about the sound this week. That's a good thing. Everybody complained last week. It threw me off. But nonetheless, join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. You can click on the live chat button. That will get you in. We've got already a good crowd there. Merbailey, Fritz, and Anon, 3510. Merbailey, Road Dogging, Count Cranula, Blau Ocean are just some that I see. I know there's obviously more of you there, but that's who I see active at the moment. But you know, you look at the European Union, and they like to say they are, quote unquote, rescuing migrants at sea. Rescuing migrants at sea. So what they do, they are literally picking up Africans about 1 or 2 miles offshore, off of Libya, right? Out of Libya, and they're basically bringing them into Europe. That's not rescuing people at sea, everybody. That is human trafficking. So here the European Union, they want to sit there and tell us, hey, we must do, I got a guy calling from, you know what, hold on a second. I'm going to take this call only because he doesn't know this yet. And it's one of my security guys in Kuwait. Let me see if I can get an update out of Kuwait from him. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. You are live on air. So how are things in Kuwait, my friend? You're live America. You got tens of thousands of people listening to you. So be careful what you say.
Okay, everything is quiet. Kuwait is booming now regarding for any potential business.
What is it? You're a CEO. I won't give them the name of your company yet, but you can use this as possible advertising to literally tens of thousands of people in the United States and in Europe. Tell us, what is the security situation like from your experience? We'll just call you Mr. R for now because I don't have approval to release your name on air. Can I say your first name at least?
Yeah, first name is fine. Go ahead.
This is Rod. He's a CEO of a security firm in Kuwait. Now, he's trying to reach me for business, I know, but he forgot about the radio show. So, Rod, you were in Yemen, because I'm going to talk about Yemen today. You were in Yemen the day that the Houthis kicked the Americans out of Yemen. Is that very true?
It's not true. Actually, the Yemeni tribe, they looking and they are beginning to keep the U.S. military or the American inside Yemen to help them out from Houthis.
Now, but you were there when the U.S. embassy started to pull out, correct?
Yeah.
And it was very hectic in Sana'a when you were there.
Yeah, actually, I was struggling between Aden and Sana'a long time ago. And the situation was very bad. Now it's worse, actually, because, you know, much is going on in Yemen regarding the circumstances.
Now, do you still have any relations going on to Yemen? Have you got any private information from your relations inside Yemen that you can share on air?
Yeah, actually, we still have our contact in Aden, in the refinery company, called Aden Refinery Company, regarding what's going on in Aden. Aden, you know, it's very sensitive area, especially for the refinery. And they are suffering from the security issue over there. Mm. So they're trying to approach us to have the full security solution for the refinery.
Sure. Now, how are things in Kuwait now? The security in Kuwait obviously is very stable.
Yeah, it's very stable. Kuwait was suffering from many complaints about the security in the airport for the flights. But the government here, they are very smart. They control everything. They have released a huge contract with G4S. And this company already have a full security solution and increased the security in the airports. So now Kuwait International Airport meet the standard security overall. So we are happy for that.
And then you know Dennis going way back now, maybe almost 8 years. How's Dennis's relations in the Middle East from your experience?
Actually, we are very lucky and proud to have such a person. He has intelligent and very thoughtful world for the security and experience in the Middle East. He's regarding for tenders, for security, for the political issue, he's in. And we are happy to have such a person in our area, in the Middle East.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm going to have to let you go with that. So anybody that would like access to the Middle East market, you can always just send me a private email to my Inside the Eye Live account, to fetch it Inside the Eye Live. We can get back to you. Rod, I'm going to have to let you go because literally we are live on air. We're going to be going out through 9 o'clock. I'll call you after the show today.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for...
Hey, that was a great radio introduction, premiere. You did a great job.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. That, everybody, is Rod. He's a CEO of a security company in Kuwait. I've known Rod quite honestly a very long time. And he's one of my key folks here in the region that gives me intelligence. Again, I have a lot of folks all over the Middle East, everybody. I can't talk about everything I know. And we really don't get too much detailed. I'm not here as a politician. I'm not here as a reporter. I'm here as a business guy. So, you know, there's certain rules and laws that you just need to be aware of here in the Middle East. Now, we should be coming up on a break any minute now. There it is. Any second now. All right, everybody, it's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with right after this. Okay, welcome back, everybody. It is indeed The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Good Saturday morning, everybody. I feel a little bit more relaxed this week. You know, last week was difficult. We had a really tough go, technically, last week. So far, right now, everything feels good, and that's a good start, you know. Whether or not it actually is good, who knows, but I haven't heard any complaints. You guys really screwed with my head over there in the chat room last week, but you can join me in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. And also, if you'd like to phone into the show today, it's 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. This is, of course, listener-sponsored and supported radio. What that means, it relies upon your donations to keep the show and the network up and running without being able to pay for the network expenses. We obviously would not have a network, and I know the expenses have continued to rise a little bit, but nonetheless, everyone's doing their best to keep expenses in line, keep the network up, keep everything fresh, high quality, all that kind of cool, fun stuff. So lots of ways you can support the station. You've got the what do you call it? The subscriptions to the show archives, which gives you like something like 87 different hosts or 83 different shows here that you can access. You've got things you can buy through the network. If you like some nice woodwork, you can catch some of Nighthawk's pretty cool woodwork. And but the best way, really, guys, just put together a $3 to $5 donation monthly, recurring. We get 100 of you guys at $5. That's $500 a month, and that would be more than holding our own. So, and that's not a whole lot to ask, quite frankly. $3 a month for this show, it's certainly, I would assume, worth it. That's a dollar an hour. of intelligent media for the politically aware, and we go for 3 hours. We're not shortchanging you here on Inside the Eye Live. We give you a full 3-hour professional show. So certainly it's a show worth supporting, and I know you guys do. You're very loyal type of audience for this show, and we really, really appreciate that. But nonetheless, guys, got to help with the network also, because I'm here and I'm not honestly planning to go anywhere anytime soon as of now. So please do your best to support Inside the Eye Live and freedomslips.com. For more information, visit freedomslips.com. Click on the live chat button. Not the live chat button. I'm just kind of going through my head here. But click on the support page and see what you can do to donate to the station, the many different ways that is possible. The CAT report is the ITEL CAT report, though. It's proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post. Goods, services, and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by our very own Blackbird 9. Really, he's on his own now. That's Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, 9/11 truth advocate, former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Spreaker. And for more information, visit blackbird9tradingpost.org. That's blackbird9tradingpost.org. Now, I know a lot of you like the CAT report. Quite honestly, I get emails about the CAT report. I remember when we first did the show back, 6 years ago, if you can believe that already. Well, 6 years I've been doing this. I can't even believe that, actually. But we were doing this 6 years ago, and back then I had a lot of cats, 9, 10, 12, 15 cats, and there was always something going on with the cats. There were new kittens. There were, like, we went through one time, we were just losing kittens left and right. They were just dying off on me. And so I got a call from somebody, said, "Dennis, please, your cat report, I'm almost afraid to listen to it anymore because your cats keep dying, and it's kind of sad to tune in and you got another dead cat. I'm starting to feel for this, your cats here." But we don't have any female cats anymore. I've just got the two males. I got One Eye, who's got one eye, and I've got Bruiser, who's been punched out and has no eyes. So I've got the two cats. I've got One Eye. It lets you know that we are an Illuminati family, because obviously One Eye and cats with Bastet and Isis and all that fun stuff all goes together. So we've just got the two cats now. It's much quieter. It's much cleaner, quite honestly, around the house instead of having 10, 12 cats. I like cats. I love cats, quite frankly, but it was a bit much. But now I'm just down to the two, and it's kind of cute. You know, today they sent me pictures of Bruiser, and we've got like an Easter basket up on the roof, and Bruiser managed to find it. How? I don't know. He doesn't have eyes, but he found it, and he just has been plopping himself into the basket. And like, if you can imagine this nice cat sitting in an Easter basket, curled up, sleeping, it's just one of the cutest things you're going to see. It's adorable, quite frankly. So it was kind of cool watching Bruiser today, snuggled up inside of his Easter basket. And then One Eye, and he's graduated now. He's finally figured everything out with the new house, honestly. You know, because when we moved to the new house, we actually moved because they were trying to capture Bruiser. And if they ever did capture Bruiser, he would have been, you know, euthanized. They would have killed him. So we moved really to protect Bruiser back last January. And then when we moved, I was not there. So One Eye disappeared for 9 months. And he's a loyal cat to me. And I'm sure he was basically back at my old house looking for me. And so I finally brought him home, found him over the summer, brought him home. And then he stayed at the house for like four or 5 months. He didn't leave. And then with mating season, when mating season came, he was out and about running all over the place. Mating season's pretty much done, so now it's kind of cute. You see this cat, he goes to the front door now, and he gets as close as he can to the door, and then he's got to bend his neck because he can't get any closer, and he looks up at you. I got pictures of this, that's how I know. And he just waits for you to open the door, kind of talks to you and says, "Come on, open the door." Goes out, walks across the street. He's a smart cat. He's got to be careful because it's a traveled street. Lots of cars on this street. And then he goes across the street to the open lot that's there and just hangs out with all the other cats for 3, 4, 5 hours. I guess they have a cat powwow. And then comes back home and relaxes for the night. So we're very secure now. We figure this guy's finally figured everything out. So now we're not so reluctant to worry about him. For a while, he would go out and we had to go chase him and find him. Like one time we found him on the roof, all beat up, somebody else's roof. So, but now we think we finally got the house like running smoothly. And if you've got cats or you've got pets, dogs or whatever, puppies, you know how the cats can be part of the family. So we're just delighted that things are calming down, relaxed. You guys have been listening to me for a lot of years. You know all the troubles we've had over the years. You never knew, quite frankly, about living in where I was. You know, I remember once living in it was a former former, okay, it had grown up, but the area was originally a Palestinian refugee camp, and I'd moved in because it was cheap, and I had no money, and it was really a terrible, terrible place to live, quite frankly, and I had a lot of kittens, and I was working with the cheapest equipment you could imagine, absolutely ridiculously cheap equipment, and one of my kittens, like with 45 minutes left in the show, literally chewed through my microphone cable. It was like the last microphone cable I had. And that was back in the Oracle days. And it's like, whoops, well, sorry about that, guys. I think I was only doing a 2-hour show back then. That's usually how you start. When you start in the radio business, the stations, they give you a 2-hour show. If you're lucky, if you want to do like a pay-per-view where you're this host and you're like want to reach an audience, you know, you can do an hour show. But usually radio stations want you to come in and fill at least 2 hours. And then as you get shown to be that you can handle it and they're not going to turn over their station to some flakes, generally the stations will give you 3 to 4 hours for the professional shows. So we've always been honored to have 3-hour shows, quite frankly. And so we're going to continue to do that. So. But guys, you need to support the network, and obviously supporting yours truly is done by North Kakalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. It's inconveniently, again, located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk, and by Blackbird's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn. You can catch his show, Blackbird 9's Breakfast Club, every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Spreaker. For more information, visit blackbird9tradingpost.org. That's blackbird9tradingpost.org for full details. You know, I got a nice email from this week. I passed it along. And it said that basically Inside the Eye Live and Blackbird 9's Trading Post are two of the best shows going right now on the internet. And that was really nice to receive. Thank you for those types of kind words. I actually forwarded that email to Blackbird, not forwarded, but I at least copied and pasted that message, sent it to Blackbird, BB9 in the chat room. And so we appreciate it. Trust me, we work for you. This is your show. And without you, the listener, there's no need, quite frankly, to do the show. So we obviously listen to what you have to say. All right, this show again, if you're just joining us, let me see how it's doing here. If you're just joining us, and yeah, it looks like a lot of you are just joining us. So, guys, it's going to be a solo show today. We do not have any guests, so we are going to be essentially doing 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. So sit back, relax, join us. Go grab yourself a cup of coffee, cup of tea. We'll be bringing you some more information from all over. Hope you enjoy the show. Usually we know you do. So thanks so much. And let's just move right along now. You know, Rod called. He doesn't know. He does know, but he forgot. He's a security CEO out of, he's now based in Kuwait. And he's very well placed in his realm, and I'm kind of placed in my realm. And so we collaborate from time to time. We exchange notes from time to time. What do you know about here? What do you got? What information do you have about here? So we're always keeping track of what's going on. within the government world, the political world. It's just part of what we do here in the Middle East, and I enjoy it. I really, really enjoy that. If I were to be in Los Angeles, quite honestly, you just wouldn't have the same access. You wouldn't have the same relations. You wouldn't have the same inside information from just talking with people on the street. And it's more complicated than that, everybody. Don't worry. But just trying to play it down a little bit. But nonetheless, it's a fun thing to do. I enjoy it. I really enjoy the environment from time to time. Sometimes I don't enjoy it, but oftentimes I do. You know, I was talking to a guy recently about Yemen. He said, Dennis, I said, what's going on with Yemen? And he said, you know, honestly, you know, and everybody is sad about Yemen because inside of Saudi Arabia is a huge Yemenis population. And if you could imagine for a second what would happen if the United States really declared war on, say, Mexico, and we were blowing the heck out of Mexico, and obviously all the carnage and the chaos that would ensue. Imagine how, you know, the Mexican population would feel about that, the people from Mexico, those with relatives. So it's a very sad, difficult situation. And obviously, as the stronger power, you know, if you have any moral compass, and not everybody in government does, trust on that. Obviously, you feel for the people involved, and these decisions are made way beyond most of us. I have no, you know what I mean? These decisions are not my decisions. They're not my business. I can only feel for what's going on, wish for the best for everybody involved. I don't involve myself in the politics and stuff like that. That would get me in trouble pretty quick. But, you know, you feel for everything. And you want to, from a, because it's what I do, I want to be aware of what's going on at all times. Well, this past week, you know, well, let's first back this up again. You know, you had President Donald Trump doing the State of the Union address this week in the United States. And he called out Ms. Karen Owens, and she's the widow of a special ops officer who was killed in Yemen during really what was Donald Trump's first operation, quote unquote, counter-terrorist operation in Yemen. Now, I'm taking this from the American point of view. Why on earth really is the United States sending special operations forces into some godforsaken village in the middle of a it's not desert, but some place in the middle of Yemen, when the people that we are attacking are armed with Kalashnikovs, and that's about it. Maybe some rocket launchers. Yeah, they have some heavy artillery, but mind you, America's how many miles away? What's the ocean that separates America from Yemen? I mean, there's lots of oceans. Tell me again, tell me, how can Yemen, somewhere here, really threaten the United States? How can it really? What is the strategic advantage of going in and doing this to people who are armed with Kalashnikovs? I say the same thing with Afghanistan. Afghanistan is literally in the middle of Central Asia. Remind me again, those of you in the military-industrial world, a military-industrial complex and the military itself, remind us Americans again exactly how that Kalashnikov sitting in some Pashtun village in South Afghanistan, how is that Kalashnikov going to have any relative bearing on me as a person? You know, I keep hearing this thing from these guys, well, we need to take the fight to them. Well, if you have intelligent border control, how are they ever going to take the fight to you? How? They can't. It's impossible. Don't give me this crap about 9/11 and blah, blah. Give us a break already. This was so freaking obviously an inside job. It was obviously done. Come on. You got Mossad agents being arrested that day with moving vans showing the World Trade Center with a plane hitting the Trade Center. I mean, those are the people that were arrested that day. And they're from your best ally, the Israelis. And you want to go fight some guy with a Kalashnikov in the middle of some Pashtun town that doesn't even have a tree on it. What's the benefit? Where is the imperative to the American people? Whatever it is that they have, okay? Whatever it is that they have that you think you need to extract, we as a people can pay for it. We as a people can pay for it. The real issue here is, we're not doing this for American interests. We're doing this for some type of financial banking interest. But that's not in our interest, because guess what? The banks aren't paying for the acquisition cost. You as the taxpayers are. The banks aren't paying for the acquisition cost. You as the soldiers are. You know, I keep hearing all this about the soldiers, the soldiers, the soldiers. Nobody wants to see American soldiers or French or whatever country you are from. Because I know we've got an international audience. Nobody wants to see our brothers and sisters that were maimed or wounded or suffer from some type of psychological duress to suffer needlessly. But at the same time, we have to ask the question. We cannot just blindly go with this gung-ho, hip-hip hooray patriotism without calling into question the logic and the rationale as to why we are doing these things. If you really want to support your troops, why are you allowing them to send them to some godforsaken village in the middle of nowhere? How is it that you should just blind? Remind me again how they can ever threaten the United States of America. You are talking about something that isn't even a flea on the United States. There's some flea in some field 10 miles away, and we're walking off in another field 10 miles. How is that flea going to ever even get on us and start to bite us as American people? These questions, nobody's asking this. You know, if you want to extract the materials, which seems to be this Rothschild banking syndicate mentality, the people who are doing the acquiring of those assets are the people. But we as a people don't benefit from it. The people that benefit from it are the commodities traders, those within the banking industry who can turn 20,000 metric tons of rice over in a day and make 100, you know, let's say $10, $12, $15 million, whatever the case may be. Those are the people who are benefiting here, folks. And even in these markets, they're often tightly controlled to where you as an outsider can never even break into this world if you tried. So the acquisition costs on raw materials are being socialized, and the profits are being privatized. See, the formula doesn't seem to change much here. Jews, with their incredible, ingenious brains about making money, have lost trillions of dollars of U.S. wealth. They didn't lose it. They stole it, okay? Let's be honest. They stole it. Yet all of their, quote-unquote, their losses were nationalized, and then the profits and the benefits were privatized. This is the ultimate welfare. And this has to stop. You want to make America great again? Okay, stop the corporate welfare, man. Stop allowing your nation to export its wealth in search of some pipe dream that's coming from Tel Aviv. That might be a helpful start. I know it's really hard for American politicians to see it this way, when the reality is that American politicians serve Jewish / Israeli interests. They don't serve American interests. Let's not kid anybody here. It's the facts. Inside the Eye Line. Intelligent people with a politically back hour number two, right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Today's date, again, is March the 4th, 2017. Good Saturday morning, everybody out there, to everybody listening in the United States and Canada. Of course, if you're in Europe or European, I should say, in Asian time zones, good afternoon to early evening. I know the time here locally is 7 o'clock in the evening, so we're well past sundown here in Riyadh. I'm hearing some good things as far as the quality of the sound this week. We had a really tough show last week, and sometimes you wonder. You know, we had Lady Michelle Renouf on last week, and she is a controversial figure in the historical truth movement. We can say that, you know, without black getting her in trouble. But nonetheless, she speaks a lot about the Jewish issue, and we do that too every week. But last week, for whatever reason, we really had a really tough go, so it's really nice to hear that this week's show is doing much better. Again, it is a non-guest show, so if you don't like The Fetch and you like his interviews, well, go to have a nice afternoon, relax. And nonetheless, if you enjoy The Fetch, well, you're going to have 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware today, because there are no yes. So that's just the way it's going to go. Call me, join me in the chat room at insidetheilive.com, insidetheilive.com. Click on the live chat button. Again, it's already filling up now pretty nicely. And close to 30 people there now. So we're heading there. I'd love to see it up to like 40 a week. I think 40 to 42 is like a great number. Somewhere in that range, it's a great number to have. You know, I remember the Oracle days, 45 all the time. So we lost a few of you from the Oracle days, unfortunately. Let's see here. Let's move along. You know, we're talking about, you know, the acquisition costs and Trump and Karen Owens and the widow of the Spec Ops forces killed in Yemen. And, you know, they had the story about this guy saying, you know, she's, you know, this Karen Owens, I think he used the term, she's an idiot. She was, in some respects, she was a propaganda prop. You know, unfortunately, sad for her. I think, and as the father of this Owens kid says, there should be an investigation. I agree with him. You know, why are you in Yemen? I mean, honestly, what are you doing there? Really, give us America. See, the problem with the politicians and the military guys and the dark state, as they like to call it, or the deep state, is they want to do all of this crap, but they don't want to tell you why. They want you to pay for it. They want you to lose your kids. They want you to lose resources, but they don't want to even tell you why you're there. What are you doing there, really? Why are you there? I mean, these guys are armed with Kalashnikovs. It's not our business at the end of the day. What do you need to be there for, other than we know these are targets of Israel and Jews first? So, okay, why are we wasting all of this money and time fighting a Jewish operation? Why? Is it because of the banking situation? Is that why? Is it because you're worried about them blocking some of the shipping areas off the coast? Is that why? Well, you know, you got Somalia, still a disaster. What are you doing there? I think there needs to be an investigation to all this. What exactly are you doing? You know, when you look at some of our activity inside of Yemen, do you realize we've been in Yemen fighting since 2002? I bet you a lot of people didn't know that. Heck, I didn't even really know that. But we've been inside of Yemen since 2002. In 2012, which is the year before America pretty much got kicked out of there, essentially, is maybe the next year after, do you realize we had like 267 people were killed in Yemen by U.S. drone strikes? You know, it's been going up. You know, back in 2002, although we weren't really doing much in 2002. I should take that back. I should correct that. The use of drones started 2011, it appears. years based on information we have. So it looks like in 2011, we started to use some drones. And then by 2013, 2012, it was the casualties were over 200 people per year. And not all of these are civilians. But nonetheless, as you these are huge numbers. You had something like 92 operations in 2009. You had 116 operations known in 2012. So America has been fighting in Yemen for a long time. Now, the reality of it is, at least my feel of the reality. Now, mind you, I go around with Saudis, and I know people have different opinions about Saudis, et cetera, and they're a culture in flux, and they got a while to catch up. But there's a lot of good people in the world everywhere. Unfortunately, you're not seeing them. But nonetheless, I drive with them, and we go into some really tough parts of town. I'm talking about really difficult parts of town. Areas where I would go because I have some street sense, and I know what's going on. But they will tell me, Dennis, if you come into these areas, be careful. Be very careful. These are, but you know, it's kind of like going in the South Central. You know, I don't want to always lambast South Central LA. Maybe it's improved since I was there. But back when I was in Los Angeles, you know, it'd be like going to South Central LA. You just didn't do it without really taking a risk. And it was a measurable risk, but you still took a risk. It's kind of like going into parts of Chicago. You're going to take a risk. How can you say you're not taking a risk when you're having so many shootings every week? There are risks. When I go into South Central back then, I remember how difficult it was. And then I go into some of these parts of Riyadh, and there are parts of the eastern province that are essentially government no-go zones. Believe it or not, there are kind of quasi-no-go zones also in Jordan. See, there are areas of pockets of people that just are not the same civilized mentality as you. And you need to accept this as a reality. You, I can just assure all of you, that if you could get a visa to come to Saudi Arabia, it ain't the most entertaining place in the world, and not even the Saudis are going to admit that it is. They are under the hand of this religious authority, and they understand that, but you just can't get rid of it overnight. And everybody gets that. They know it's a problem. But that's an internal issue that they have to deal with. But at the same time, as long as you're willing to dress, which for you gals would have to be an abaya, you don't have to cover your head, you don't have to cover your face or any of that stuff, but yeah, you would have to wear the abaya. But you're not going to be at risk. Your life's not at risk. You'll be far more at risk going into parts of Sweden or parts of Germany or parts of France than you would be here. You would actually be safer here than in many parts of immigrant overrun Sweden, UK, France, Greece. You couldn't go there. In other words, there is an element within the world here that is just not at a similar level of civilized mentality as perhaps you would expect. And you have to respect that this is true. Governments, especially those in the security world, they deal with this all the time. And if you look at the police in America who have to deal in these really tough ghetto neighborhoods, you ain't going to get me. Yeah, you'll find good people living in there, but you're not going to get these police. I'll tell you what, let me query them. You're not going to get me to, let me just rephrase that. I'll get the police to kind of admit that these people aren't civilized. Same thing happens here when I go into parts of Riyadh with Saudis. And they say, Dennis, look, this type of people here, this is ISIS. This is Daesh. You don't know where they are. And they look scary. Mind you, not everybody is by looks scary. I'll admit that. But you go into these areas and you can see and you can feel the stress on the streets that these areas are not someplace that you, as a civilized social human being, would want to be hanging out without some type of assistance very close at hand. You just don't want to do it. And this is true the world over. Now, there's huge amounts of propaganda being waged by Iran. And I don't blame the Iranians. This is geopolitics. I can't blame the Iranians at all. Because what we see going on inside of Syria is far from civilized. On the other side, from what my people tell me, and my people are generally pretty clean. That doesn't mean they're not misinformed, but they're generally pretty clean. Is that when you look at some of these tribes within Yemen, you aren't dealing with the necessary, the most civilized people in the world. And we have to respect that. So you look at what's going on inside of Yemen, and the way it's being sold here is that it's essentially a war against this uncivilized element. It would be like, you know, the Crips or the Bloods taking over Los Angeles and half of California to the Americans. And they're going to just start to control it. They're going to kick the American government out, and they're going to control all of Southern California up to, let's say, Ventura, Santa Barbara, and they just control the whole thing. And then they start using the weapons they've acquired, and they start bombing Nevada or Arizona. And that's kind of the feel of what you get going on here. Now, I'm not saying this is exactly 100% correct, because everything is muddied over here. No matter how much I try to get to the root of everything, everything is really muddied. But as Americans, everybody, we've sent trillions upon trillions of dollars offshore. And each time you do that, that is money that cannot flip inside of your economy, because the money's not there. So you've got 94 million Americans without work. But guess what? You don't print your own money. You have a private federal banking reserve system that prints that money. That private banking concern decides who to give that money to, and it ain't you. So then you see your economy starting to wither. And even though America is a very dynamic country, how can you sit there and tell everybody that America is great and you got 94 million people out of work? And then you want to parade a widow of a special operations forces officer or soldier in front of the American people and talk about what a brave guy he was fighting terrorism. And what he was fighting was a guy with a Kalashnikov in some village in the middle of nowhere. The cognitive dissonance, it just astounds me. Guys, that guy with the Kalashnikov, I don't care if he doesn't like me. I don't care if he hates me. I don't care if he wants to kill me. He's in a freaking village somewhere in the middle of nowhere. I don't care. That's like some guy right now in Detroit saying, or some Jewish guy for that matter, in the UK saying, I hate that bitch. He's an anti-Semite. I'm going to get him. How are you going to get me, dude? I don't care. I really don't care. I worry more about the Jewish people who call me an anti-Semite, though, than I do about some guy in some village in Pakistan or in Afghanistan or Yemen or Somalia or anywhere else. Because guess what? They're isolated, but the Jewish guy's not. He's got his relations. He's got his connections. He's got his lawyers. He's got a lot of ways to take us Americans down that. So what am I worried about the guy in some Yemeni's village? Now, from a Saudi position, it's a whole different world. They feel, and that's not my business, it's theirs. They feel there's a national interest at stake here. And I'm not going to argue with that. For them, many here, it's like the drug lords taking over all of Mexico, and the Mexican government has been kicked out, and now it's a battle between the drug lords and Saudi Arabia. It's not like that, but it's something like that. In the meantime, and this is not, and what happened to Syria is wrong. And let's be honest, money came from all over the Gulf and all over the United States and all over the Jewish. I would not be surprised the Jewish community, through its networks, was funding what was going on in Syria. I know we were, my goodness, because, you know, they're finding TOW weapon systems and stuff. You know, here, let me give you an idea how stupid it is for the American people to involve themselves in these quasi CIA actions. There's something that was built by Hughes Aircraft Systems that goes all the way back to the 60s and on into the 90s, called the TOW weapon system. You probably heard of the TOW weapon system. Tube launched optically tracked weapon system, something like that. And what it is it's essentially an anti-armor device. And I remember back when I was the one inspecting the windows that would go onto these systems back in the early 1980s. The company I worked for, we made like 600 ship sets of these things. And we talked to the military and we talked, you know, because we were part of the program and, you know, they want to make you feel patriotic, so they'd fill you in. But this was like to be put at the front lines also in Europe against the Soviet Union. And this was like your first line of defense. You know, you were going to have these bodies out there with TOW type of anti-tank weapons, and they're supposed to take out the first wave of tanks. But their life expectancy probability was about estimated to be 35 minutes. What a terrible job to have. Don't worry, dude. Your job is to sit out here with this tube-launched, optically-tracked weapon system, and you shoot tanks with it. But we're not going to tell you you're going to live about 35 minutes if the shooting starts, you know, just keep hitting tanks till they get you type of thing. Well, what happened is you heard a lot with John McCain, who's this insane moron out of neocon Jewish first moron out of Arizona. And he's off there inside of Syria meeting directly with these terrorists. And he's bragging and chumming it up with them. And the next thing you know, America is shipping these tube-launched, optically-tracked weapon systems to Syria. And they were used the first year and a half or so with devastating effect against the Syrian government and Syrian forces. But guess what happened? Because this is non-state action. You're basically giving this to people who you don't control. And the Syrian government purchased 18 of these from the quote-unquote the Free Syrian Army. It wasn't hard, you know. It was essentially Syrian intelligence passing themselves off as another rebel group, dissident group. Hey, we need some TOWs. Why don't you sell them to us? We'll buy 18 of them. And that's exactly what happened. Syrian intelligence purchased from these terrorists, really, 18 tube-launched optically-tracked weapon systems. This information then got into the hands of Russia, of course, got into the hands of Iran, got into the hands of Hezbollah, and it got into the hands, of course, of the Syrian government and their research and development technology teams. So guess what? These stupid morons who sold or gave away the tube systems, this weapon system, to these morons inside of Syria, have compromised this weapon system now to where it's almost obsolete. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay? We have essentially allowed second and third generation countries to defeat one of our most effective and cost-effective weapon systems for armor. Nowadays, they appear to be, and this is just coming out, it was reported in Defense Update. It says, homegrown Syrian soft kill system successfully defeated the TOW weapon system. So we have essentially allowed a second, third world generation country to defeat an American weapon system for what? For what? Oh, that stupid, moronic, sadistic country called Israel. We gave away one of our most effective weapon systems against tanks, and now Iran possesses the knowledge how to defeat it. We have We have the Syrians know how to defeat it. Not that Syria was ever an enemy of ours. They were not. They're an enemy of Israel, not ours. We don't care about Syria. Quite frankly, there's no reasons for us to not be friends with Syrians. It's gone into Hezbollah. And it's, of course, with the Russians. So now they have created some type of infrared jamming equipment that is able to disrupt the optical command line used by these TOWs, the METIS systems. And it wasn't difficult. The Israelis had actually come up with this system before. But what the Syrians needed was the actual signature of the weapon, the TOW system, in order to defeat it. And all they had to do was buy it, because people like John McCain decided to give it away. Give it away. So that it could then be purchased on the black market. And you guys want to talk about patriotism and supporting your troops. But you just gave away. You gave it freaking away, man. These morons in the government, in the dark shadows that were pushing for support of the Syrian quote-unquote rebels, gave away the very defense technology you need, or they gave away the weapon system so that countermeasures could be built against it. Now you've got all this soft kill devices, and essentially in the battle for Aleppo, it's reason that they were using the TOW systems on infantry targets, because they couldn't hit those targets that were hit, that were using this soft kill system, which would then cause the missile to go off track and just explode harmlessly 20, 30, 40 feet away. This is the stupidity behind this, quote unquote, this war on terror. And it's not for the American people that we are waging this. Guys, we are fighting this war on terror for the state of Israel. We are fighting this war on terror for the Kalergi plan, for the Yinon plan. See, these Jewish people they think long term. You know, they had their temple, quote unquote, their temple, whatever it was, probably just was a brick wall, because Jews create nothing of value with beauty to it. So it was probably just a brick wall. And it was probably not even their temple. They probably stole it from somebody else. They had it defeated in 66 AD. And ever since then, they've been on this vindictive, psychotic war against the West. For what? See, they're just a strange people. And now you're fighting these battles for Israel. And at the same time, you're doing it in a way that allows for all of your intelligence, all of your resources, all of your research and design, all of this to be defeated by Syria, which has some very bright people. Don't let anybody kid you. There's some very, that's probably why Israel hates these guys, because they are bright people. But for what? See, we're just doing this. We're sending some of our best soldiers into Yemen. We're sending them into Afghanistan. We're sending them into Syria. We're sending our weapons into Syria where it can be purchased on the black market and then have countermeasures built against them for Israel. Give me a frickin' break. And then State of the Union address, I heard the Congress, when Trump talked about her, cheering for minutes and minutes and minutes. No, she's not the idiot. She's not. She's the victim. You know who the idiots are? The idiots are the Congress people who cheered for minutes upon minutes upon minutes upon minutes, because they are essentially traitors to the American people. They caused this woman to lose her husband. For what? For what, really? Nothing. And you can say what you want, but I don't care, guys. I'm not stupid. Unless you come to me how that Kalashnikov in that village directly affects my security in the United States, I'm sorry. It's just dumb. It is dumb. Because if you want to say, well, we got to protect, oh, that's what I protect my borders for, you morons. That's what my airport security is for, you morons. What are they going to do? They're going to sneak in anti-tank rounds? Yeah, right. Okay, well, then you're telling me you're idiots within my home security. See, every argument these guys use just tells you they're freaking incompetent. They're morons. They just want to take your money. See, a security economy, everybody, is a losing proposition. It will never succeed. Why? Because you produce nothing of value. There's no investment. Whatever is produced produces nothing. My goodness, you put cameras everywhere. Isn't that wonderful? But then when you need the cameras to work, they just magically don't work. Why? Because they're only there just to like show. But when the real people that are going to be doing this terror really decide to do something, they just dismantle everything. And then if so, okay, we invest billions in what? A non-productive asset. It's just a non-productive asset. It just boggles my mind to read the insanity coming out sometimes into the security business, which is what I sometimes tell my friend who called in earlier today. To me, dude, it's kind of silly. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. And if you'd like to give us a call, the phone lines are open, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. Love to take your call. Again, that is the Inside the Eye Live call-in line. Now, Arab News was reporting that U.S. warplanes hit some more targets in Yemen this week. That's a second straight day. That was Friday yesterday. Reporting that 8 militants were killed. That is according to some tribal sources, as Washington, the United States, has recently began to increase its air war against what these Houthi slash terrorists, if you want to call them that. Defense officials in Washington told AFP that American forces conducted about 10 strikes in Yemen on Friday, which would be yesterday. The attacks hit similar targets on Thursday. They claim to be trying to hit, again, claim, because we don't know. But they claim to be hitting weapons caches, fighters, and military equipment. Who knows? These guys, you can't trust them, quite frankly. But that's what they claim to be doing. Troops descended on the Wadi Yajbum village in southern Shabwa province and engaged more of these Al-Qaeda, ACAP, they call them, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula militants for nearly half an hour, according to some residents. And what else? About 3 hours later, residents in a town called Jabal Mugan. See what I mean? Who cares? These are so far out of the way. Why are we Americans even bothering? But anyways, in this what's called the Abyan province, there was more airstrikes reported, gun battles between Al-Qaeda fighters. And they're saying U.S. soldiers. Now, reports coming out of Yemen are saying that U.S. soldiers are on the ground fighting, whereby Navy Captain Jeff Davis, who is a Pentagon spokesman, is saying that although the U.S. has been launching air raids, there has not been any U.S. soldiers actually fighting on the ground. In the meantime, a senior Yemeni official has described these strikes as open-ended, which means that the U.S. is going to be blowing a ton more money over there. Again, for what? We would like, again, if you give us a compelling national reason, national security reason why you're doing it, perhaps we as a people can decide. See, a lot of these people in the national security world, they want a trust us mentality. You know, trust us. You know, we know what we're doing. We know, but you can't assume they know what they're doing, folks. These, at the end of the day, are employees like anybody else in the world. They are agenda-driven. They need budgets. They need to keep their jobs. They got to, you know, and there's a lot of issues going on here that nobody bothers to calculate into the equation. When you break it all down, a lot of the times it has to do with somebody wanting to keep their job. They don't mind keeping the killing going because they got a job. And that may sound harsh and insensitive, but my job isn't to be irrational here. I mean, give us a compelling reason, because there are many reports that the United States was actually cooperating with this AKIP Al-Qaeda in Yemen. And the real reason why we're there was because the Houthis kicked them out. and the Iranians kicked them out because of what the U.S. was doing. So we can't trust these people in the shadows to tell us the truth. I once had a guy tell me, said, you know, Dennis, one thing you got to learn about the power of deception, the real deceptive evil of the planet. He said, there's something professional, expert about it that makes it virtually impossible to penetrate this veil of deception because it's so good at what it does. And it's because, in my opinion, we're probably talking about a trans-dimensional force that is operating here, and it's really hard to penetrate it. Just when you think you've got it, it goes off into something else. So it's very, very difficult, to say the least, to penetrate what's going on. And if our national security people can't give us compelling reasons, well, okay, then if you don't have a compelling reason, dude, don't fund it. Just put these people out of business. We don't need them. They're causing more problems than it's worth. For instance, you go to Syria. Just this week, the Russians and the Syrians and Hezbollah and Iran, they were able to retake the ancient Syrian city of Palmyra. Well, Palmyra was one of the great treasures of the Western world. It was a great city, a great Roman city, and much of the ruins were there as a testament to the greatness of the West 2,000 years ago. I mean, my goodness, 2,000 years ago, we can witness what these people were able to create. And although we can make some pretty amazing stuff today with our technology, what they could do with stone was absolutely phenomenal. That today, our best and brightest cannot do it. Our best and brightest cannot do what they did 2,000 years ago. Now, mind you, 2,000 years ago, their best and brightest couldn't do what we do. But nonetheless, let's give credit where credit is due. Our best and brightest could not reproduce what is going on there. And so after the fall, or when the battle for Aleppo was taking place, and remember now, during the Battle of Aleppo, one of the things that helped turn the tide more rapidly in the Battle of Aleppo was that all of those TOW weapons that John McCain was so happy to give away were essentially useless, because by the time this invasion took place, or the Battle for Aleppo took place, the Syrians had already engineered a countermeasure against the TOW weapon system. Thank you, John McCain, for giving away American technology so they could be purchased, so that a second, third world nation like Syria can defeat this weapon system now. You're just such a genius, dude. Yeah, really a brilliant guy over there, Mr. McCain. But nonetheless, the Syrians, knowing full well that they had countermeasures in place, could bring in their armor at close range, and there's nothing that could be done about it. So they were able to turn this battle very rapidly. But what happened was, because so many resources were diverted to the Battle of Aleppo, the ancient city of Palmyra in Syria was left open. And what happened? Daesh came down and retook the city, because they'd been kicked out, I think, last March. Well, this week, it was retaken again. But the problem is that although it's been liberated, like the Grand Amphitheater has been largely destroyed. Many areas within this great city was destroyed. And that, to me, is a great tragedy, because, again, when you look at Jewish society, Jewish culture, there's nothing. They don't produce crap. Guys, they don't produce anything but misery. For 2,000 years plus, that's what they've given the world. They don't produce anything of cultural value. How can you create cultural value when you regard the rest of the human race as essentially subhuman inferiors to you? And yet you don't have the brains nor the intelligence to produce anything of cultural value for the rest of the world. Yeah, I know that cognitive dissonance is really hard for Jews to reconcile here. And for many of you, unfortunately, a lot of you, not necessarily in this audience, but a lot of people out there. So Palmyra falls. But now, and I look back now and I say, you know, we know largely that Daesh is a Jewish operation. It is funded perhaps by people in the Middle East. The people come from the Middle East, obviously, but other parts of the world. When you go back to the 1990s and before, the public education systems in Saudi and elsewhere were teaching a very harsh form of Islam that says anybody that did not follow Islam was a kafir. They were somebody that was to be killed, and there was no mercy to be given. And that was taught in the public schools. So imagine you had generations of these types of men running around the world, and you had to get rid of them somehow. So, well, who was weak? You could unleash them on the Syrian people, unfortunately, for the Syrians. And you're unleashing them also, by the way, on Europe right now. So it continues. We look at what's going on inside of Syria. And the only reason strategically that Daesh was sent back down into Palmyra appears to be just to go down there and start to destroy as much of the cultural value of the West as possible. When I see this type of action, and I know the hatred of the Jewish people towards the West, I see this as nothing less than an assault on the West by Jewish-backed tyrants under a cloud called radical Islam. But the whole goal is to destroy much of the cultural heritage of the West that made its way into Southwest Asia, which is really the Middle East. You can give me your reasons, of course, but that's how I see it. This is nothing less than assault on Western civilization. Not Syria per se. I mean, yes, it's Syria. But Syria itself has long been a bastion of this Western idea of real multiculturalism and real tolerance for other people. Not this manufactured crap that Jews want to put forward today. Not even close. You know, I'm going to move over to Europe. You know, part of this assault on Libya and the assault on Syria really had to do with flooding Europe with undesirable populations. And Muammar Gaddafi said it very clearly. We in Libya are the wall that prevents Europe from being overrun with the black hordes from Africa. And Gaddafi called it. He said, if you take out Libya, you will open up Europe to an absolute nightmare of an assault from the sub-Sahara hordes. So we have to assume that our military planners, our politicians, our geostrategists understood this very well. Now we're looking at a layer of treason in the West that is almost incomprehensible. People just can't fathom it. But we're looking at this layer of treason that is so pervasive that its only goal appears to be the destruction of the West. When they took out Gaddafi, what they did is they took out a lot of support for the Palestinian people. So therefore, this whole baloney of taking out Gaddafi was what? Another attempt to support this draconian, sadistic, whacked-out land called Israel. The idea to take out Syria, the same. What do we end up with? Hordes and hordes of people coming now into Europe, and there are no nations as bulwarks to stop them. And then to make matters worse, you've got these morons inside of the naval forces of the West taking their ships off 2 miles off the coast in international waters off of Libya and then human trafficking them into the Europe. That's your Navy. And they, guys, that's your navies here in the West. Yet these people want to wave flags and talk about patriotism and how you're supposed to support the troops. Okay, I've never had a problem supporting the troops. Where were you on 9/11? Yeah, you were nowhere to be seen. Because although you want us to support you, the reality is that you don't have power to be supported. You're a tool of something else right now. I'm serious. Guys, the Pentagon on 9/11 was hit by a missile. You got pictures before they blew up the wall of this tiny little hole where the missile went through, hit the Naval Intelligence Building. Where were you? Hello? Where were you? See, the powers that run the American economy, that run the national or the nation state called America, are Jewish from where we come from, globalists if you're coming from the Alex Jones world, but they're certainly not American. And although we are hopeful that Trump is part of this shadow world that can help turn the tide back, at least give people some breathing room while we create even more awareness to try to get even more political power going and shut down some of this insane Jewish power in America. We're not there yet by any stretch of the imagination. There's more Jews now in Congress than ever. And don't think for a second that they're not going to put Israel first, because you're naive. You've got Europe now declaring war on the United States that says, look, if you don't let people in that we tell you to let in, we're going to start blocking Americans from coming to Europe. So all of our relations with Germany and France at the elite levels are going to be what? Thrown under the bus because of a bunch of unaccountable traitors inside of something called the European Union. Then you have the tragic case of Greece. Greece is amazing, quite frankly, with what's going on there. But first, let me talk about this story. I think I've got this window open. Yes, I do. You know, this week, there was an Austrian court, and it convicted 8 Iraqi men of raping a female, obviously, tourist. But with these guys, you never know, you know, with the LGBT community, it could be anybody. So, but nonetheless, they were found guilty of gang raping a German tourist on New Year's Eve more than a year ago. And this came down in Austria. And they were all given prison terms of 9 to 13 years. Well, I hope that they're going to be deported afterwards. Quite frankly, they should never be allowed to stay. One was dismissed. One charge was dismissed because they said that he was sleeping. I didn't hear anything. I was sleeping. Okay, whatever, dude. The prosecution argued that the 8 men convicted exploited the fact that the victim had been drinking heavily on New Year's Eve in 2015 and was unable to defend himself or herself. The defense is saying, well, you know, she was just intoxicated. What do you expect? So basically they're saying, well, you know, if you get drunk, I guess you should put warning labels on the alcohol. Dear women, if you drink too much, this is a license to allow people to rape you. Something like that is kind of like the logic there. But what was fascinating was something that came out of a Chechenian migrant. And he said, 8 people, and this is a quote, quotes coming out of a story covered from Vienna by Associated Press. Quoting, 8 people raping a woman, that's honorless. Such a thing doesn't exist in our religion. According to Burhan Akbas, a migrant from Turkey. Okay, he's from Turkey. Then he goes on to say, when such people come here and screw up like that, then everybody will think that Chechens, Afghans, all refugees from war areas are all the same, according to Mansur Salimu, an asylum seeker. He's from Chechnya. And then he goes on to say, but it's not like that. For example, and this is a quote in the Associated Press, everybody. So pay attention to this one, because it really is amazing. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, where it is March the 4th, 2017, as we wrap up the final few weeks of spring, which is kind of nice, everybody. I mean, I honestly have not had much of a winter. I had a little bit of winter when I was in Jordan, and boy, it was cold in Jordan. When I was there a couple weeks ago, say 4 or 5 weeks ago, it was really cold, I got to admit. My house was freezing. I would wake up and I could see my breath and have to light up the space heater and try to get the heat, the warmth, get the cold out of there, I should say. But it was kind of fun going home then because I had the cats and they could like sleep on my head and keep me warm. Bruiser's always good for stuff like that. Bruiser loves to sleep on your head. So he was warm. But guys, it's been not, there's been very little hint of winter here in Riyadh this year. Some years I've seen it rain, and more rain. And I love that because it's a day off because the roads are so terrible. But here this year, not a single day off due to weather, not one. That's not a great thing. I love to get days off because of weather, but we didn't get that this year. I remember a story a couple of years ago. We had a lot of heavy storms and rains. We had rain and wind, and it was really tough. Weather was tough. And this guy comes up. He was from MOI, Minister of Interior. And he showed, you know, we were supposed to have a meeting there. And he shows me this SMS message, and it's from the MOI's messaging system to its employees that basically everybody, you're supposed to head home because inclement weather is on the way. And he said, see, look, we got to go. I can't stay. So what do you mean you got to go? Come on, man. And then he showed me the SMS, and then I said, okay, I let him go. Come to find like a week later, he lied to me. It was like the day before. It's like, come on, dude, you can't be doing that. I think he's in Washington now, though. I think he's in Washington State or something like that. He's a good guy, humble guy, nice guy. So hopefully everything is going well for him. So I don't think he's listened to my show, but I think about him. He was really a good guy. I liked him. He was a fun guy, humble guy. All right. Where were we? We were talking about the migrants inside. By the way, join us in the chat room, insidetheeyelive.com, insidetheeyelive.com. Click on the live chat button. We've hit the 30 mark. That's great. That's the peak of the day so far. So join us in the chat room. Also, if you'd like to call in, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. And that's kind of cool because today is 3. It's 4, March 3rd. It's the fourth day, and it's 2017, so that's like 3, 4, 7. Kind of cool. I'm just not getting into the numerology, guys. I'm just kind of thinking that's kind of cool as I look at my calendar. We were talking about these migrants and the 8 Iraqis that were put in, basically given 8 to 13 year sentences. And this Chechenian guy, he's saying, oh, it makes us all look bad. But this is what he's quoted in Associated Press. When such people come here and screw up like that, then everybody will think that Chechens, Afghans, all refugees from war areas are all the same. But it's not like that. For example, the majority of us, we also cause problems, commit crimes, but no rape, only criminal assaults and robberies. And that's quoted in the AP. The majority of us commit criminal assaults and robberies, but we don't rape. And that's what Europe wants to protect. That's what Europe wants to allow into Europe. A people who will come in and cause problems. Unbelievable. I don't know if you saw the story come out of France, but Marine Le Pen, who is the nationalist from, one of the nationalists, French nationalists, is now in a battle. It's about a 27 to 20. You know, she's winning, she's not winning. And the European Union, which, as we just talked, just kind of like declared war on the United States this week. It's a soft declaration of war, but it is a declaration of war as far as I'm concerned. And they voted this week also to strip Marine Le Pen of immunity because she tweeted a photograph of somebody purportedly being burned in the cage. If you recall the story of the Jordanian pilot who was allegedly burned in his live in his cage. Well, she tweeted out that photo. And now because of that, the European Union wants to voted actually to eliminate her immunity. And they're going to try to go after her also. So this power, this Jewish power, obviously it is everywhere trying to do what it can to maintain power. And guys, we need to keep a full court press on. Let's be honest. The people out there all over the world, but especially here in the West, we got to keep a full court press on. Don't trust Trump too much. Hope for the best, as I tell people, because I get House Trump. Today, this morning, I'm in a meeting. How do you like Trump? It's like, we hope for the best. You know, that's all we can do right now, but we got to keep the pressure on. Greece, we've covered the Greek story, you know, the debt, but here's what's funny. Essentially, Greek is in the final throes of being destroyed by the banking systems, which is, to me, these Rothschild Jewish banking systems. And they're saying here that the bailouts, really, they weren't bailouts. You know, what it was a wholesale sale of Greek assets. And whenever we heard, especially in the 2000s, you know, if you remember the early 2000s, 2003, 4, 5, 6, on out to 11, 12, 13. You heard a lot about privatization schemes. Of course, all of this was nothing less than people who produce money out of thin air, using that money to try to go out and buy up real hard assets. So essentially exchanging paper for hard assets. And when you look at what's going on inside of Greece, that's kind of what happens. One analyst put it that the debt problem continued to erode the European Union from within, which is very true. And it's impossible to hide really what's going on inside of Greece because this is a tragedy and it continues to grow. The scheme is essentially like, but essentially what they're saying in Greece is this. If you want to get more money, you've got to hand over your gold, and you're going to have to hand over your assets. So essentially, they really are looking now in the final stages to essentially give, quote unquote, give, put that in huge quotation marks, everybody, give to Greece a payment of €50 billion, which doesn't even cover the debt repayments that they already have. But as collateral, they want the gold and the real estate of the country. Now imagine that. They figured that the assets, the physical assets of Greece are worth around $50 billion. So you could basically buy Greece, the entire country, the entire state infrastructure of Greece, you can buy it for $50 billion. So for somebody like a banking syndicate who can produce money out of thin air, how much and how difficult is it to raise $50 billion? It's not. It's just a stroke of a pen. So they're saying, look, we'll give you €80 to €90 billion, or euro in this case, but we want the physical assets. You must pledge your gold and you must pledge your physical assets of the state. And that's essentially what they are trying to do to Greece right now. So if you don't think that Greece has some major problems, you would be in for a huge surprise. Germany already is going to be running all of the busiest tourist airports. Why would that be important? Because Greece obviously is a huge tourist destination. I mean, it is the heart of Western civilization. If you want to repay your debts, you would need revenue. You need money. Where do you generally start to turn to get your money is where people from outside come into the country to get the money or to go to your treasures, your architectural or archaeological treasures in the case of Greece. Yet the Germans are going to control the airports. So guess what? All the money that's coming in from the tourism doesn't go to Greece. It's going to go to the Germans. Isn't that nice? That's how the system works. That is how it goes. And so essentially, you're putting the Greek people into a situation to where they could never, ever get out of this problem. Another thing that I think should be, and apparently when you go back to the Cyprus deal in 2015, essentially this deal, it was a memorandum. It enabled the property of Greece to essentially be given away to multinational companies. So you're looking at a theft that is not unusual within this criminal organized banking syndicate schemes. Privatization is one of these neoliberal economic models that have failed for the people time and time again, but they are only there to condition the people, really, in my opinion, to accept the wholesale theft of the people's assets. Waste, water, the airports, you name it. This is one of the greatest rapes of a country ever, because although we have done it to Venezuela, we've done it to other countries. This is the heart of Europe. You know, Greece is right at the heart of Europe, right there in the heart of Western civilization. All of our logic and reasoning and everything that made the West great, much of that came out of Greece and Greek thought. And we have a situation now where essentially Jewish power structures are destroying the Greek people. And so whether or not Greece violently responds to this is now just a matter of, really, it's a question whether they do or not. Because they know the Greeks have zero chance of paying back the money. Zero. So that means that, like, the debt to Greeks is like $95,000 per person right now. But there's no money coming in. So, okay, how is every Greek person going to come up with $95,000 to pay back debts to the Germans and to these unaccountable central banks? Good luck with that. It's just not going to happen. All right. So good luck to the Greeks. They need it. Let's move on over to the State of the Union address. And I just want to cover some of the points here. Again, if you'd like to call in, 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. Or if you'd like to join us in the chat room, it's humming, as always, quite frankly. InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. And you can click on the live chat button. So we're going to cover a little bit about, again, Donald Trump's State of the Union address and just comment on some of the points he raised and just some of my thoughts about it. And it's going to be kind of an avant-garde ranting type of format here as we move through. One, Trump tried to deliver a message of unity and strength to the American people. And he's trying to say it comes from my heart. I'm actually not going to doubt that. I think the guy, I like the guy, quite frankly. I like him based on what I've seen. But he talks about this recent targeting of Jewish cemeteries and this idea of how we are all united against, quote unquote, hate. Well, first of all, that whole idea is just a bunch of Jewish crap. And we're tired of hearing about it. We don't want to hear about it anymore because it's always a one-way street. I don't see anything targeting Jewish agendas and their hatred towards the West. I don't see the Trump getting up, or any other politician for that matter, and saying, you know what, the toppling of the cemeteries, these quote-unquote Jewish cemeteries, which was probably a false flag, and kind of Trump's hinted around that. That's kind of why I like him. But, you know, all of this happens, but what about all of the same things and the absolute destruction of cemeteries that Jews have done in Israel in creating their state? How is that hate not addressed here, everybody? If you want to play this, oh, this high moral ground baloney, okay, let's talk about the State of Israel, everybody. Because all of you people coming up with this line are Israelis or Jews. This isn't a Western line. What do you mean? We stand against hate. Oh, baloney. Hatred is a human emotion. It exists for a reason, and the Creator gave it to us for a reason, and it is not for Jews to tell us how we should and should not be able to use the very emotional, energetical properties that was granted to us by the Creator himself or herself, as you wish to see it. They've talked about defending borders. You know, Trump talks about how they've we the American people, have defended other people's borders while leaving our borders wide open for anyone to cross. Well, that's fine. But we need to raise, quite frankly, need, I'm going to use that word here, this issue needs to be brought up and Jewish influence into why these borders are left open. So we can deal with the structural problems inside of the United States so that you can begin to change the dynamics, the political power plays involved that opened up the borders in the first place. And it's not just inside the United States. It's inside Canada. It's inside virtually every single Western nation. And it is being brought about by a gilded elite that's not even one of us. By their own definitions, they are Jewish people. They don't have a homeland. Their homeland is Israel. America is just something they can screw over so they can continue to take money and ship it all back to Israel. This is just a racket, really like a criminal racket. America, Trump says, must put its own citizens first. Well, absolutely, who could disagree with that? I think America should put its own citizens first. Saudi Arabia certainly has no problem putting their citizens first. And who can fault them for that? Why aren't the Germans putting their citizens first? Why aren't the Swedes putting their citizens first? Why aren't the people of the UK putting their citizens first? Quite frankly, every nation on this planet should be putting their own citizens first. So nobody's going to argue with that. But why are we not putting our own citizens first? Those are the issues, again, that have to be addressed because we are talking about a structural institutional problem inside of the United States that has to change. And in order for us to change it, we have to attack and we have to focus on Jewish power structures as a political unit inside of the United States. There's no way around it because that's who's behind a lot of the negative actions that target what is traditionally a Western white European continent. Not traditionally, it is a Western / European / white continent like in Europe, and what created and established what became the United States of America. He talked about dying industries will come roaring back to life. Okay, well, if you're talking about dying industries, you're talking about really your heavy manufacturing sets. Well, how are you going to do that on a war economy where you're still worried about protecting Israel at the end of the day? You can talk all you want, but at the end of the day, what are you doing? You're not creating any domestic crews. You're not building bridges. You're not building anything that demands your steel industry to be revitalized. You're not doing anything yet. All you're telling us is we got to put Israel first at the end of the day. He says that heroic veterans will get the care they so desperately need. Well, no one's going to fault the fact that they need care. No one's going to fault the fact that we, the American people as an entity, but you know what? Let the Federal Reserve pay for it. Let the Jewish community pay for it. Let the global Jewish community pay for it, because all of these soldiers are needing care because they were off fighting wars for Jews in the state of Israel. So why should we not tax people like George Soros, 95% of his income, to help pay for it? Why should we not go after senior Jewish politicians in America and their demographics or their constituents and tax them 90% and start to have their money to pay for it, because they're the ones who engineered this crisis? And if they want to leave the country, you can leave, but you leave with 5% of your revenues and get the heck out and don't ever think about coming back. See, these are the types of issues that obviously are not popular, and it's not easy to attack money because money has the resources to attack you. But don't just talk about heroic veterans without dealing with the fact that they're quote-unquote heroic because they were unfortunate enough to be sent off into a war that supported a Jewish agenda. I was on the streets of Los Angeles before the Iraqi war. And there were two parades. One went down Hollywood Boulevard, and it was pretty massive. I mean, there were a lot of people parading down the street there, and I marched through that one. Then there was another one around Fairfax and Wilshire Boulevard. And if you know Fairfax and Wilshire Boulevard, it's Kike Town, to use a not-so-politically correct term. You are in the heart of Kike Town. It is terrible. I don't think it was quite there. I think it was closer towards... it was around there. I can't recall exactly, but it was in this area. But it's a heavy, heavy, heavy Jewish area. Maybe it was at Western, right around Western and Normandy, because the subway there ended and people were probably there because that's where people could get to. And I was there. And on the right hand, if you're facing west along Wilshire Boulevard, and I know I've got listeners in California, so you guys know what I'm talking about. But if you're facing west towards the beach on Wilshire Boulevard, on the north side were the pro-Israel groups, and on the south side were the pro-peace Jews. Let's call them pro-peace. Nobody goes against Israel at the end of the day in the Jewish community. And I'm there. And the people, the pro-Israel group, these pro-Israel Jews, I have never seen anybody so insane in my life. So enraged, eyes filled with this quote-unquote hate that they want to quote-unquote start legislating away. Screaming like lunatics about how we need to support Israel. We need to go off and fight terrorism and blah, blah, blah. And it's all about kill, 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 kill. And excuse me if you're Jewish out there, but it's repulsive to listen to these types of people talk. On the other side were some Jewish people, but they're more rational, probably closer to like me and you. And they're holding up their signs and they're like shaking their head like it's an embarrassment. I said, and I'm walking the streets that day. And I'm looking for trouble a little bit. So I'm talking to like one nice Jewish lady. She seemed nice. I'll just say she's a nice Jewish lady. And if you recall, I spent a lot of time in the Jewish community in LA. And I said to her, I said, what's the matter with your compatriots over there? Because they're not my compatriots, they're Jews. I don't like them anyways. And I have a right not to like them. And I have reasons not to like them. They're not nice, likable people. I said, what's the matter with your compatriots over there? And she just shook her head and she says, these people just want to kill. They just want war. They just want to kill people. I said, yeah, it looks that way. So then I walked across the street and I started to protest against these Jewish people who are protesting. And they're like, you're not American. You're anti this. And I'm like, first of all, you're talking about Israel, you morons. I said, this is America. I have a right to be on this street right now. I have a right to say what I want to say. And if I disagree with you as an American, I have that right. Who are you as a Jew to take that away from me? And they would just go freaking ballistic. If you want to see somebody turn from white to red to almost blowing steam out of their ears, try that one day. Go to a Jewish pro-Israel group and say, I have a right as an American, to say I disagree with you, and watch the insanity, the absolute livid hatred that comes from the Jewish heart. And you'll start to understand why I say what I say. You go try it. Don't take my word for it. Go do it. I encourage you. And it got scary. Because here I am as an American on a street filled with a bunch of Jews. And these people aren't just Jews. They are rabid, let's put Israel before America, traitorous type of Jews. And they will not tolerate anybody in America that has a different opinion from them. It is Israel first, or we have a right to do whatever we want to you type of Jew. These are the enemies of the American people. And they started to gather around me, and they're screaming at me, and I'm screaming back. If you can imagine the fetch, surrounded by 8 to 12 Jews, and they're carrying their signs, and they're basically, they turn pink. They were lobsterish because they're so angry. And I'm just holding my ground saying, no, I'm an American. I have a right to disagree with you. I have a right to stand on this street. It is a public area. And finally, it was so obvious, the commotion, that police came over. And these police were not Jews. They were actually probably some nice Irish kids or something like that. They had this Midwest look to them. And they said, "Sir, what are you doing here?" To me. I said, "Well, I'm here protesting and disagreeing with this group of Jews here." I said, "I don't like what they have to say, and I don't like the way they are talking to me. They don't have a right to tell me where to stand on this street. They're telling me I must go to the other side of the street. And I'm saying I have a right as an American citizen to stand right here on this side of the street. And they don't have a right as a bunch of punks to push me away." And they looked at me and they shook their head in an agreement with me. But they said, "Sir, please, you are absolutely right. You have a right to stay here. You have a right to disagree with them. But as you can see right now, it's getting dangerous, and we prefer that it not escalate any further than it already has. Could you please," and they were nice to me, "could you please step away and go to the other side of the street?" And I said, "Why should I have to move from this side of the street to the other side of the street when I am, as an American citizen, doing absolutely nothing wrong? Why is it that we as American citizens must always defer to these lunatics within the Jewish community who want to do nothing but use our country, our resources, and our goodwill to go around and destroy the world?" And you can see they have no response. They said, "Sir, please, could you go to the other side of the street?" And that's what it's like when you start to deal with this Jewish power structure. See, Jews are so arrogant. They will tell you, if you don't like it, leave the country. As if your birth country, your kin, your Volk have no value. That only the Jewish world is of value. I find these people and this mentality so repulsive. And I don't like it in the Western world. I don't like it within. In other words, if I disagree with you, I'm not going to tell you to leave the country. Now, if you are trying to impose an agenda upon me that goes against the constitutional way upon which that law that governs our coexistence together, we're going to have some problems with you. And if you try to do anything that inhibits my constitutional, I feel we should use the absolute full force of the law to destroy you. But I'm not going to sit there and say, "If you don't like it, leave it." That's kind of a limp way to talk, because you sound Jewish to me. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Good show today, everybody. I've enjoyed it. I've been kind of relaxed. If I feel relaxed to you out there, it's because I am. I'm just in a good mood, but I'm relaxed. I took a nap about 2 o'clock today to about 3:30 and started to put the show together about 4:15. And just kind of been having a nice day. I hope you're enjoying the show. You know, I was talking about the early days, you know, when I first started doing radio back around 2011 or so. 2011. I had a 2-hour gig with, Oracle Broadcasting. And they provided us with a shoutcast graph of who comes, who goes, you know, that you could see. And I was like always worried that nobody would stay till the end of the show. You know, I'm like, people, maybe they show, but then they get bored with me and they'll leave. But that never happened. That honestly never happened. People stayed right to the end. And then as soon as I left, everybody would just kind of like dive, you know. And so I appreciate that. And I know that still kind of goes on today. I don't get graphs anymore, but I know that kind of goes on today. So, guys, thanks so much for staying. Thanks for joining us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Again, InsideTheEyeLive.com, the live chat button, telephone lines. No calls today, but 1-347-688-2902. That's 1-347-688-2902. Going over some of the points here. We've got quite a bit to go here. To finish this up, and I'm not going to cover all of it, but we're going to get through some of this. Some of what Donald Trump was talking about. You know, Donald Trump in his press, he said, you know, that they've begun to drain the swamp of government corruption by imposing a 5-year ban on lobbying by executive branch officials. I like that. I think that's a great idea. They've placed a hiring freeze on non-military and non-essential federal workers. I like that idea. Again, it's gotten so bad that the federal government actually employs more people than the public sector, and you just cannot support the world and the economy by doing that. Joining us from Hawaii, 808, free and awake, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hey, Fetch.
Hey, how are you, man?
Oh, it's great for me, but it's a political Greek tragedy.
Well, yeah, what's going on in Greece is terrible, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this week they said if you want more money, you know, no problem, but we know the assets are worth $50 billion. You want $90 billion, just pledge all your assets. And that's like, that's basically heist. That's a criminal syndicate theft scheme.
It's suicide. It makes you wonder what was the value of joining the EU in the first place for Greece.
Yeah, exactly. They should have left. The people told Greek politicians, we do not want a bailout, and then they gave them the bailout anyways. So it's like that was just an exercise in mental masturbation. You know, let's just go vote for something that we're not going to give the people anyways. Let them feel good.
Right, so. Yeah. It must be a, you know, very strong control mechanism outside of Greece that's, you know, making the people that are elected to serve the Greek people go against their own will.
Yeah, it sometimes wonders if we're not getting to a one of these Robespierre moments, you know, where there needs to be a really serious
revolution.
I mean, it makes you wonder sometimes. Because no matter what you vote for, you can't get what you voted for anyways. So, okay, what's the point of voting? And
right.
Politicians are making it such that to where it's impossible to use the system for change. Now, it did happen in Russia. We saw the change there, but it was really with Jews abandoning the system. So maybe we're supposed to wait until Jews completely destroy the system like they did to Russia, in which case they will move on because there's little to do and there's too much rising hatred towards them and they'll have to leave and then we can start to make things better again. So it's kind of interesting to see how things are playing out. Did you catch any of the State of the Union address?
Bits and pieces. I had to kind of listen to it in chunks because Facebook was not streaming well that day. But yeah, I caught the gist of it.
What was your
the highlights?
I didn't see any of it. I'm just going through some stuff coming out of actually India that kind of broke it down completely. It's a big Indian. It's an Indian paper, digital paper, but they broke it down to all the key points. So they broke it down, and they're non-biased. They don't care. It's India, so they're just kind of covering it. So that's why.
Well, it's like, yeah, it goes. I've said this before. Trump's greatest weakness is his foreign policy, his vision, his understanding of it. But it's a great domestic speech. He made an attempt to unify the American people more. He talked about appreciation of the veterans and increasing their benefits. But strangely enough, he wants to increase military spending.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're getting Hillary in reverse because we're getting on this war footing.
You've been spending $565 billion for over 15 years, and yet you want to spend more.
Right. So it goes to that control mechanism like the Greek people are experiencing, at least their politicians. Someone's controlling Trump. And very effectively.
You know, it's not unlikely. Again, you know, big money doesn't play around, you know. So it does, I'm sure, have its control mechanisms. But, you know, I didn't catch it. You know, I'm sure he sounded like a populist, you know, appealed to the American people. But I'm looking through some of these points. You know, he said he cleared the way for the construction of the Keystone in Dakota. Well, that's kind of like, dude, there's a lot of opposition to that. What do you mean? You
right. Yeah. But he said he didn't.
Dude, there's a lot of opposition to that. So who are you just to go, quote unquote, clear the way? There is opposition, and it is a valid opposition. It's not for you just to dictate to everybody what it is that should and should not be done. I don't see that as a net plus. I think the opposition should be heard. Yeah. And it should be.
Well, we could be headed. Yeah, I think we're headed for our own American tragedy if he keeps on at this pace. You know, so it may be just a great disappointment that Trump was elected.
Yeah, and well, I think he means well, but I think he's just some cases he's a smart guy. Like, he's going to stop drugs from pouring into the country. Okay, what are you going to do? You're going to gut the CIA?
Yeah. In a right. Well, he is at war with the CIA. You heard about the airstrikes, right?
No.
Did you hear about the recent airstrikes in Syria? And basically, he gave the Russians the go-ahead to bomb key targets. It took out a lot of the ISIS or ISIL, what the proper term is, leadership out. Yeah, and he pledged to do more, and he's ordered American forces to assist in that effort. So
that would be a big...
Yeah, and that's a CIA.
That's
the emphasis. So he's going against the CIA because he knows they're working against him. I don't know. It's just so much interplay. It's hard to know who's good, who's bad.
I find American politics right now to be some of the most fascinating it has been in probably 20 years.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. So, you know, a part of you just wants to just sit back and watch the play unfold, you know, but that might be kind of reckless because at some point you want to intervene and hopefully put a stop to it. But, it's a tragedy.
He called about, dealing with medical. Americans pay the most for medicine for the worst service in the world. I don't think Americans understand that, but you pay the most and you get the least. I'm curious, you know.
Well, that's a positive thing. Fetch, he wants to get rid of Obamacare, so that's a
thing.
Plus.
He also needs to get rid of the racket, the syndicates like the FDA, some of these agencies that essentially keep innovation from coming to the fore, that, you know, keep drugs, safe things like the cannabis oils off the market because Jews aren't going to profit from it.
This may be a slow, drawn out process. You know, he may not even be able to accomplish this in his administration, but maybe he can lay the groundwork to have it done.
Yeah. Well, he talked about, you know, giving the U.S. military the tools to fight and win. And as you heard, if you heard the first part of the show, okay, keep giving weapons away so that it's easy for third world countries to start to create countermeasures against you. You know,
right. You talked about the TOW missile technology that was compromised because the Syrians. That. Right. So,
yeah, well,
so there goes CIA
in Israel, the Israeli groups in America saying you got to do it.
Right.
This is a huge blow, actually. Within 5 years, the TOW weapon system is going to be obsolete because of these morons fighting in Syria. Oh, let's give them all TOW weapons. You know, we got to. Okay, what do you think, dudes? The Russians are stupid. People are stupid. They're not going to develop countermeasures. And you just gave it
reverse technology.
Control. Yeah, they just. Well, once you got the signature of the rocket, you could build the IR sensors, not sensors, but the active IR components to mimic what that thing sees and cancel it out. So it has no eyes.
Yeah. Right. So, that was foolish. John McCain, thank you. Once again, he's selling us out like he didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So, I've looked at this.
Oh, what do you think about? Sorry.
Yeah,
my mind just
speech, by the way. And, you know, it seemed like it was drawing a lot on patriotism, the military. But again,
the heartstrings.
Yeah, but give us a break, dude. What are you over there fighting? They're armed with Kalashnikovs.
Right.
They cannot harm you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yemen.
A Kalashnikov will go maybe 200-300 yards. Okay. I think the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, alone is 4,000 miles. So tell me what threat that poses to me.
None. It's just perpetuating the military-industrial conflict.
It's a bunch of idiots being given money, is what it is.
Fetch, did you hear about the Democrat reaction to his speech?
No.
Like the ladies in white in protest?
I've been
against
so busy.
Women suffering?
I missed everything this week.
Well, here's the highlight. They wouldn't stand, and everybody gave a standing ovation and applause to the widow of the Navy SEAL that was killed in Yemen.
Yeah.
But these ladies refused to stand. You know, they were just uncouth, and they started making, I think, facial gestures and all of this and that, and just being totally childish. So, yeah, and so that's the division is still there. I mean, right. To not respect the death of this man, even though it might have been under dubious
circumstances. What was he there for? I mean, again, give me the reason he's there for. The father, though, has come out and asked for an investigation. Why are they there? Joining us from the 864 area code, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Is that Frank?
No, 864.
This is Mike in South Carolina.
Mike, long time, man. Long time. Good to hear from you. How are things?
I'm doing just fine there, Bubba. I listen. I just don't talk much. But you were talking earlier about Greece and how it's been kind of destroyed. It's being cannibalized up and handed out to everybody.
Yep.
Yes.
The dirty little secret about that is that there was somebody put in charge in Greece, the former president by the name of Papandreou, who was a shill, who was put in there to take on as much debt for Greece so it would be destroyed. And then Papandreou slipped away and said, oh, well, I tried. Well, the dirty little secret about Papandreou is he's Jewish. He needs to have a Mussolini visit.
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it? Hanging him up.
It would be excellent. It would send a message. Also, something else, when Trump gave his speech 3 days ago, if you'll notice very carefully, if you review the film, you'll find out that Paul Ryan and Mike Pence, the vice president, are sitting behind him in chairs. They both have the same tie on with the same Israeli blue colors on it. Did you happen to notice that?
Well, I didn't catch anything, quite honestly.
No,
so
I didn't,
busy.
But good point.
I wouldn't surprise me. Joining us from the 704 area code, Frank, welcome to Inside.
There he is. Right on cue, Frank.
Yeah, that's actually the first thing that I noticed in watching that was the Israeli blue, the vice president and the speaker, Ryan. And then Trump had an unusual tie, uncharacteristic tie on. It was like a dark blue tie with a white stripe running diagonally through it. So I couldn't quite figure out that. But, yeah, there was a lot of pandering. He started right off the bat talking about anti-Semitism and how something's got to be done about that. He's pandering to the blacks. And, you know, I mean, I understand in the environment that he's in, he's got to do a lot of that. So I don't really take it very seriously, but I felt the pain of that woman, the Navy SEAL's wife. I felt for her, but
I'll be honest, guys. That's that type of stuff is senseless because you're going in. There's nothing to American national security.
Well, I've heard that Israel has long.
Go ahead.
Should not diminish his death. Should be emphasized.
But still, we need to immediately start the investigation, Frank.
Yes.
I've long heard that Yemen is like a guard. It's like a recruiting field for Israel to get like non-Jews, non-Jewish looking people to work for in their intelligence agencies as operatives, you know, to commit false flags, that kind of thing. So that's the only connection that I've ever really, come. And I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know if you know anything about that, but I've long heard that Yemen is one of their recruiting fields. Where they, they go in and get people when they need them.
Wouldn't surprise
terrorist
me
breeding ground.
Why the Americans are there so much. Vera, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
I just had to put my two cents in.
All right.
And say hi to Frank and everybody. This is not on that topic, but I just wanted to say what I just heard recently on our news. They want to get rid of, all this hate, right? Because we've got so much hate against Muslims and stuff and the Jews that now if you send things through the mail, there was one guy, he can't even send stuff through the mail. And so the people that protect people's rights, they said, well, that's, you're taking away people's freedom of speech. you know, regardless. And it wasn't real hateful stuff anyways from what I saw. But and then they also brought up that Zundel guy that 36 years ago he was charged or whatever. Wasn't it some Hans Zundel or whatever?
Yeah,
charged.
Ernst Zundel.
Yeah, Ernst Zundel. Anyways, they mentioned him. Oh, yes. And he was a Holocaust denier. So I just had to throw that in because they have to keep perpetuating. Well, I don't deny the Holocaust happened, but it was nothing like what they say. And what they're doing out there in Israel, that's more of a Holocaust than what happened to the Jews.
Mm. Mike.
Think about it.
Yeah, Mike, how did you take the speech? How did the American people respond, in your opinion?
I think they took it very well. It was a very good speech. And one thing that he could have done, I think, was have Kate Steiner's family show up at the same time, too. Kate Steiner was the person, the girl who was killed on the pier out in San Francisco by an illegal. And I'm still waiting for Senator Nancy Pelosi to make a $6 million contribution to the Steiner family for allowing that to happen.
Yeah, that's true. Frank, what was your read on the people in your area? How did they take this speech?
I really don't know. I don't really deal with people very much. I more listen to you know, things on a national level or international shows like yourself. But you know, I think I heard like 55% of people thought it you know, was a favorable, or you know, had a favorable opinion of the speech. I might have heard that. I know it was something like that. But yeah, I mean, you know, all these war, I'm hardcore on these wars, you know. I'm like, I can understand some poor, you know, dumb, ignorant person, you know, 18 years old, joining the military, whatever. Maybe they don't know any better. Although with the advent of the internet, you know, et cetera, nowadays. But, you know, Navy SEALs are not young punks. These are old. These are like, the more mature. They know better. They know better. They know all these damn wars. This is a bunch of Jewish nonsense. So if you go in there and you get killed, oh, freaking well. That's how I feel about it.
Oh, these guys are professionals. They know the game. They tell me here in the Middle East, look, when we see these guys, we know they're paid killers. You know, you watch them differently than the regular American soldier. Vera, how was the speech taken up in Canada?
How is what?
How was the Trump speech taken up in Canada?
Well, the people that I kind of speak to, they're all for Trump. And I says, well, I wouldn't have total faith in him. Oh, no, Vera, he's this. At least he's mentioned this. He's mentioned about the fake news and, you know, but I said, well, look, he's surrounded by Jews, you know. And then more or less that, well, you keep your enemies, your friends close, your enemies closer. Well, I'm thinking that way, right? You know, that's a possibility, but I don't think so. And what, you know, it's almost like a setup. Like, okay, he's getting rid of all the Muslims that he don't want or whatever, and Canada's just raking them in, man. Like, they make some kind of agreement, and then it's almost like we don't have a border. They can just walk in and don't worry. Yeah, and they don't even have to have paperwork or nothing. Yeah, don't worry. The RCMP will escort you to Manitoba, somehow Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's unconscionable.
Hello?
Yeah, that's unconscionable.
Yeah.
You know, to allow people without any documentation is unconscionable.
I understand it's $2,000 a head.
Guys, thanks for the
burst. Really?
Yes.
Okay, bye, Fetch.
All right, guys, thanks for the burst at the end of the show. Thanks for calling Mike, Frank, Vera, and
Adios.
See you guys.
Aloha.